Hey, it's Jeremy Bergeron, host of Marketing Trends. Before we get into our latest interview with another marketing trailblazer, I wanted to let you know that the Marketing Trends podcast is now available for sponsorship. By partnering with us, your company will be connected to interviews with marketing's most compelling CMOs, CEOs, VPs, and thought leaders alike. And your logo and advertising will be prominently featured on YouTube, social media, and every major podcast network. You have nothing to gain but thousands of followers and millions of impressions each and every month. Reach out to info@mission.org to see how your business can benefit from partnering with the Marketing Trends team. This is Marketing Trends, your number one source for exclusive interviews with chief marketing officers and executive marketing leaders in the Fortune 1000 and beyond. This is Jeremy Bergeron, and I interview, collaborate, and partner with world-class CMOs and marketing leaders across industries. Your story, your messages, your content. These things are at the heart of what you do as a brand. It's also what connects your company to your customers, your prospects. It's what inspires them. It's what teaches them and helps them grow. But creating, managing, and accelerating content creation is often very chaotic and can be difficult. Empower your content teams with Brightspot Content Management System, made specifically for marketers and corporate communications leaders. No more waiting for a developer or an agency or having to piece things together to get your digital experience. Put the power to create and deliver powerful yet complex digital experiences into the hands of your marketers with the comprehensive suite of ready-to-use marketing tools and functionality. Bring a bright spot to your tech stack, your team, and your customers with the Brightspot Content Management System. Visit brightspot.com/marketing trends today. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Marketing Trends. I'm your host, Jeremy Bergeron. I'm super stoked, as always, because I get to talk to the most ridiculously brilliant marketing leaders on the planet. Today, guess what? We have another one, Jenna Flateman Posner. Let me tell you a little bit about this amazing human being. She is the chief digital officer at Snipes. If you don't know, you need to know, snipesusa.com. Let me just give you a little background. We'll get into some of this stuff on the show, but Jenna was a senior account executive for the New York Press. She was an interactive developmental executive at Getty Images. Shout out to Getty. She also has this really cool professional rugby athlete thing going on. She played rugby for the USA rugby team, then went through some really cool companies, went through a few acquisitions, which I also want to get into. She was a manager and Mid-Atlantic director of sales at Level Up. She was then the VP of strategy for Curate, VP of strategic partnership, and SVP of strategy at Clutch. There's a lot more. She also serves on the board of governors for the Wesleyan University Rugby Division. I don't know how she has time for that one, but she is here with us in the virtual studio. Jenna, I already think you're dope. Thank you for being here. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm psyched to be here.
Gosh, look, I mean, your background's dope. You're up to cool stuff. You're working at a really cool brand. For the audience that may not know about Snipes and, you know, the company and what you do, break it down for us. Describe Snipes and describe your role as chief digital officer.
Sure. Yeah, no problem. So Snipes is a global sneaker and streetwear company. We were founded in Germany in 1998, and we've been live and thriving in multiple countries in Europe since then. About 7 years ago, the Deichmann Group, which is the fourth largest footwear holding company on the planet, acquired Snipes, but kept our CEO in charge, which is awesome, Sven Voth. It was always his dream to come to the US. And by way of acquisition in early 2019, he was successful at doing that. So we acquired a business called Kicks USA out of Philadelphia, 64 location regional chain in early 2019. And then we were kind of off to the races. About 6 months after that, we acquired Mr. Allen's out of Detroit. The end of last year, we acquired Jimmy Jazz, which kind of shoehorns from the Midwest down the East Coast into Texas. And then about 6 days after that, we acquired Expressions, which gave us a good stronghold in the Boston area and New England. So seemingly overnight, we've tripled our store count, 10x'd our digital revenue over the past 3 years, and we're just, we're wild. So we're, yeah, we sell hype sneakers and streetwear, Nike, Jordan, Puma, Adi, you name it. That's our game.
That's amazing. I mean, this is, it's such an interesting business. I mean, ridiculously popular market share in the, as you said, kind of global sneaker, you know, streetwear retailer brand. And Snipes is also aligned with some of the world's like biggest musical artists, extreme sports athletes, online influencers. You may have heard of a few. There's just some awesome things that you're up to with the brand. I want to ask you about this because you went through a lot of acquisitions. I mean, Level Up was acquired by Grubhub. Yep. Curalate was acquired by Bizarre Voice. Radius was acquired by Fiserv. And now Snipes has acquired at least three companies, if not more, since you've joined. What has that done to shape your perspective as like a marketer and marketing leader, going through so many acquisitions and then being a part of three yourself now?
Yeah. So what I'll say is being acquired and acquiring are two completely different situations. So, you know, when you're on the retail tech side, which is where I started my career, that's always the goal, right? That big carrot at the end. That's why you wear 37 different hats. It's why you work all night. It's why you're drunk on this startup Kool-Aid because, you know, you're all trying to build something meaningful and ultimately have a substantial exit that we can all benefit from. On the retail side, when you're acquiring businesses, it's much different. So you're dealing with actually ingesting and digesting businesses. And in our case, we're really buying these store footprints and buying these allocations that can get us access to more product and help increase our expansion across the country. So those acquisitions are very different. Trying to understand what parts of the business are valuable, what we want to maintain, what we want to migrate, what we want to move on from, everything from people to process to technology. I mean, it's a beast. So doing that so many times over the past 3.5-4 years, it's certainly part of our strategy. It's how we're kind of chipping away at the country and finding our way west. I don't anticipate it stopping, but it's definitely just a part of who we are and how we're going to continue to grow.
What do the acquisitions do for you, like to inform your strategy, you know, going to market and growing bigger and, you know, acquiring all these stores? Like, what does it do for culture at Snipes? And then what does it do just for your overall strategy as you think about growing more market share?
Yeah, that's so interesting. It's a great question. So organic store growth is challenging. Finding the right locations, getting approval from our vendors to open new doors. It's a process and it takes a lot longer versus acquiring a smaller chain that can get us a foothold in a market where we don't currently don't have one. We can acquire into these physical locations that can allow us to move a lot quicker. So what could have been, you know, a multi-year process to get 20 to 25 stores out in market, boom, we can acquire. And really the process there is making sure that it's got the right product inside and it's got the right sign on the front of the store. So, you know, that from a physical strategy perspective is one. You know, we're lucky enough to have the support and ownership of an organization that can fund those acquisitions. Not every company is in that position. From a digital perspective, the opportunity for migration and growth through those acquisitions is different. It's definitely a much different strategy, and it's a lot more, I can't say a lot more challenging, but I'll say the challenge is very different. I'll kind of explain. Here's the example. So if we acquire a company, and you've got a customer base that frequents that store, what's going to happen eventually is they're going to come to that store one day and it's not going to have a Jimmy Jazz on the front anymore. It's going to have a Snipes. And when they look inside, it's going to look a lot nicer and it's going to have a lot more product, better product, and they're going to have a better customer experience. They don't have to change their behavior. They don't have to walk a block away, right? They get to still walk their normal path, come to a store that's going to serve them more effectively. Now, with us, what we're being asked to do is maintain the value of that store, but we got to burn ours down to the ground, right? We got to get rid of jimmyjazz.com and we've got to tell people to walk that extra block by a Foot Locker or a Finish Line and not walk in, right? So that strategy is very different. The benefit is that it's on our own timeline and we can employ the best practices that we think are going to move the needle. But I would say with Jimmy Jazz, with that acquisition, they were larger than us when we acquired them, right? And so finding a way to maintain that equity, value, authority, that customer base through that migration has been a huge challenge. And we've been shockingly successful at it. Jimmy Jazz still exists. But as we look at the percent to total digital revenue, we've more than flipped since we've acquired them. which has been very, very cool. So we're close. I think we're hoping to shut the site down kind of Q1, Q2 of next year.
Wow. What have you learned with customer experience, like seeing how customers are experiencing these brands, right, prior to acquisition? You also have this amazing experience that people have with Snipes when they interact with your brand. Are you learning things about customer experience and how these brands have doubled down in ways that maybe Snipes has not? Or is it like, no, we're going to overlay the customer experience strategy because like Snipes is winning, let's just keep going? Like, what is that balance like?
Yeah, no, of course. I mean, think about what a lucky, unbelievable opportunity it is to acquire a business that's bigger than yours and get full access to all of the data, all the wins, all the challenges, all the learnings. You know, for us, when we're looking at our competitors, there's so much we don't know, but we had the opportunity to acquire one and look behind the curtain and see what's working and what's not, glean all those best practices, take them, and then institute our own in order to be ultimately be a better together combined entity. Yeah, absolutely. We've learned good and bad out of these acquisitions. And I think it's a really big differentiator and a really big opportunity for us to you know, keep springboarding the business and keep growing.
Are you also assuming other marketing folks? Like, is their marketing team growing bigger and bigger with these acquisitions, or how does that work?
Oh, absolutely. With any acquisition, you're evaluating everything, whether it's process, it's tech, it's people. Mm-hmm. And we've had a number, obviously, of resources, technologies, processes that we've retained through those acquisitions.
Okay. So what, in your opinion, is Snipes' like biggest brand differentiator in a really crowded streetwear market?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, it's interesting. Pre-pandemic, if you asked our CEO, Sven Voth, who Snipes is, you know, what kind of company is Snipes? His response was always, and still is always, we're a marketing and entertainment company that happens to sell shoes. So pre-pandemic in Europe, we were doing something like 288 events a year in Europe.
Wow.
So if it was sponsored events, whether it was dance competitions, sponsoring, you know, e-gamers, or we were in dance, we were in skate, we're in hip hop, just finding a way to connect with these really super niche markets. That is our differentiator in Europe. And when we came to the US, you know, what was so beautiful about that transition is that we had all this, like, this roadmap for success that we could take into the US market, but we also had the autonomy to determine what was right for us, right? What does this American market need that might be different than the European market? So obviously engaging with those niches like skate, like dance, like hip hop, like basketball, those will obviously always remain key pillars to who we are as a marketing organization. But through the lens of the pandemic, through the lens of civil unrest, our, you know, who we are politically in the US right now, gave us a really unique opportunity to reimagine and redetermine how did we really want to engage with our customers, right? Who did we want to engage with and how did we want to engage with them? And what it translated into, I'm going to get to the answer to your question, which is, what's your biggest differentiator in market?
I love it.
Yeah, I'm here. Is a commitment to our community. Recognizing that we have thousands of employees that work in our stores and that also live around our stores. And one of our key, you know, we have something called the CARTA, which is basically like our mission. Things like be authentic as f***, get shit done. One of them is ear to the streets, right? Making sure that we understand who our community is, who our consumers are, and not just the people that walk into our stores, but the people that live around our stores and what the communities around our stores really need. And through this lens of COVID and all the other political things that were going on in this country, we decided to double down and really lean into the community. And we became incredibly philanthropic. Things like opening up tech community centers in every one of our major markets. Things like giving away 1,000 turkeys on Thanksgiving. Things like revitalizing basketball courts and community gardens, and just really finding ways to give back to the people that not only frequent our store, but live in the communities around them. It's stuffed backpacks on back to school and free haircuts. It's, you know, and this is something that has really put us on the map. And it wasn't really the intent. It's just what was needed during this time. And we had the means and interest in doing it. And so a whole part of our marketing team has now pivoted and turned off away, not away from brand marketing, but have recognized that this community marketing is our brand marketing. And it's gotten a lot of attention. not just, you know, from press, not just from celebrities, but from our vendors and from our community members. And it's feels so good. Just feels so good to be doing that.
That's huge. Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. So
that's awesome. I know that that will undoubtedly, to me, like, it's like gravity in philanthropy. It's like you invest in the community, you invest in things like that. It's like, it's going to result in return on investment. Like, this thing just works out. We had a brand in here a couple of weeks ago, Kendra Scott, you know, it's a jewelry brand that started in Austin. I mean, and just as I was interviewing their head of brand, like, I realized that the through line and what they made, or the bet they placed early on, was this idea of the same thing. It's like, where can we give back? How do we give back in real meaningful ways with our community at scale? And it's like, no wonder the brand continues to grow. It's like, I think it's huge. And I love that you guys have also done that. That's so cool.
Yeah. And I think what's so cool about it too is, so Kendra Scott, every year I'm getting my wife a piece, at least one, maybe two, maybe three. It's like, she loves it. It's a no-brainer. It's always a win.
That's awesome.
I didn't know that about them. And I think that's great. And I think we're in a very similar situation where it's not a marketing play, right? It's not about telling the world that you're doing this. It's not about leveraging opportunities to tout this work in order to drive sales. I think, to your point, when you do the right thing, when you put the right thing out there, the growth is going to come, the right thing is going to come back. So, you know, it sounds to me much like Kendra Scott. We're not doing it for press. We're not doing it for attention. We're just doing it for the community. And yeah, it's been really, really, really good.
Wow. So let's think about this kind of balance, because do you feel brands like Snipes and the brands that are affiliated with it are really driving today's buyer preferences? Or is a brand like Snipes tasked with keeping ahead of trends and observing in these popular culture shifts?
Yeah, it's a fun question. I think we have the benefit, we're a brand of brands, right? So we do sell our own apparel and accessories. We absolutely are pushing the boundaries on our own brands for sure. But the hype demand, I mean, this hype selling, this, you know, on any given day, having 200,000 people show up for 1,000 pairs of shoes, like, it's real. And that's not driven by us. Okay. That's driven by Jordan. It's driven by Nike. You know, it's driven by these vendors that have this rich legacy of knowing what consumers want and when they want it. So we have the benefit of riding that wave. Now, that being said, you know, there's a huge opportunity for us to translate that product into the market. And that's really where marketing plays well, right? That's where we get to show lifestyle, we get to dictate lifestyle, and we get to leverage our relationships with the DJ Khaleds of the world in order to tie together kind of the cultural pillar, right? That comes along with hip hop as an example, and the cultural connection and relationship between the product. And we kind of get to sit in between that and create content and do storytelling that really exemplifies that and shows the market that we are a part of that. Are we driving that? I don't know. I think we're facilitating it, right? I think we're enhancing it. I think we're championing it. And yeah, I mean, I think we're driving it through the lens of marketing.
You talked about this idea of hype selling, which is huge in the world that you're in. This idea of kind of low quantity, high demand, super, super interesting space. What have you learned about hype selling? What are you learning about hype selling in 2022, wrapping up the year? Is there a science and an art to this thing? I mean, as a marketing leader, what are you noticing with this category of hype selling?
Do we have another hour?
We could.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's probably one of my favorite parts of my job, because it's ever changing, it's evolving, and you're at war with technologists, right? So you've got these kids that are building these bots. The whole value here, for those that don't understand this whole hype sneaker situation, is that many of these shoes have aftermarket value. So they buy it for MSRP, which is what we sell it at. They can then go resell it and make a buck on the back end by selling it on the gray market, on a GOAT or a StockX. And so this technology has been created to try to capture and purchase legitimately at full price as many of these units as humanly possible, because they can, for every unit they get, you know, they have margin on each one of those on the back end. Now, We, like Nike, align with them on this concept of equality. Don't like the fact that consumers are coming in with bots and trying to capture all of this product. We want to get the product in the hands of real consumers. And so we're at war, right? We're at this kind of like tech battle trying to protect our product. And oftentimes I'm challenged, right? When I'm having conversations like this where they're like, why? Like, who cares? The money's green. You're selling through. What's the problem? The problem is that I'm not getting the customer data. And I'll explain. So if I sell that product to you, then I can know who you are. I can have all your contact information. I can get your opt-ins. And I can upsell, cross-sell you over time. I can build an LTV with you because I've sold this shoe to you. You are also more likely to come back to me because you hit on my site and you got a great pair of shoes that you're really proud to wear, right? Now, if the bots come in and they come and capitalize on all of your units, yes, I'm getting paid in the moment, but I'm losing all of that long-term upside. Because you know who's getting the customer data? It's StockX, it's GOAT. They're right. Selling to the end consumer, not me. And so it inhibits my ability to grow the business, better serve my existing customer base, and ultimately have the trust that I'm going to be able to control and dictate, you know, who is able to get access to this product. And so it's an incredibly important discipline that we've built over time. We're very good at it. We've got a big, long stack of text daisy chained all the way from the first time someone tries to enter the site all the way down to the pre-auth of the transaction that tries to deter multiple units getting out the door to a single consumer. And it's a lot of fun because it changes all the time. So they find a way in, we block them out, we make some changes, they can't get in. We nerd out and watch and fist pump as we watch people complain about not being able to abuse Snipes. It's a blast.
Wow. I didn't realize how much of that would be. Huge. Yeah, that's got to be a top of mind. Yeah, because that, and with the speed, the velocity of some of this tech, and you have to always be looking over your shoulder in some ways and being prepared to combat that. And wow, that's such an interesting space.
One, stability issues alone, right? I mean, if you've got 16, million transaction attempts in a second, you know, you've got to have tech that can manage that.
Right.
So it gets really intense, really fast. What I will say is, you know, we were doing deployments this week, as recently as Thursday. You know, most folks are in code freeze at this point, but we're dealing with high volume, high velocity selling 3 times a week. So we actually don't go into code freeze because why? I mean, it's not, you know, Black Friday is no more vulnerable than any other day.
Mm-hmm.
So we do have the benefit of being able to continue to innovate and evolve over the course of the year. And we don't really adhere to those crazy deadlines.
You mentioned Black Friday. I was just curious, how was that experience for Snipes? And I've talked to a few different retail brands who were saying kind of different things. Some were saying that people were moving, they were shopping earlier and buying earlier and kind of getting ready for Christmas in October.
Yeah.
And gearing up. And some of the brands were positioning themselves for Cyber Monday and Black Friday in different ways because of the economic headwinds. Just curious about lessons and experience that you had going through that.
Yeah, I'll say since I've been at Snipes, we've had the benefit of having a really good inventory position, meaning we didn't have to get promotional. We kind of bought right. The pandemic changed that a little bit. Things got a little funky from a supply chain perspective. And so we had some points of the year where we were low in inventory. Other parts of the year were very high in inventory. The benefit of being high in inventory is that we were able to get more promotional. So I got to play, right? I got to have some fun with markdowns and promotions, limited time offers, things like that. As we look into next year, we're really leaning into loyalty, trying to get a more rigid, more published program so customers can actually be incentivized to identify themselves, where today they just do because they want to get an e-receipt or maybe they want to get, some promotions. But as we're taking that leap into loyalty, having a really condensed period of time with offers and givebacks, and we were able to test and learn a lot. Man, it drove the needle. And to your point, it did start early, but for us, it didn't wane. It just kind of keeps going.
Okay.
So it's been really successful. We've had a really great Q4 so far, and we don't really see it slowing down. It's been really good.
I mean, I saw Cyber Monday still happening today. I saw some ridiculous stuff on the site right now, which I'm not normally going to hype up the site to our listeners, but I'm just saying, do not buy the Air Jordan 1 Low OGs. I'm buying those. In fact, I've got a tab open. It's a 12 and a half Jenna. that I literally have open right now. When we're done, I'm buying those and they're trending and it's a final sale. So
you should just do it now. You could like do a transaction on the podcast. Like let's
that
like,
would be
that'd be some sort of milestone, right?
That would be great. It would be. Okay. I'm gonna leave the tab open. Let's see if we can get there.
All right, cool.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So look, you've had some epic campaigns and activations and digital experiences, you know, since working with this brand. I want to key in on DJ Khaled, but I also just want to open it up to like, what are some of the campaigns and experiences you provided that stand out, right, when compared to competitors or other brands?
Yeah, I see a ton of value in our physical store activations. You know, I don't think you'll hear a lot of digital executives really talk about that. So it's kind of funny. You know, we actually did this dunk museum with our opening for our Eastern Park location, where we actually had this collector come in and we had, you know, security for like 5 straight days to guard the store. We had, you know, every ridiculously hype old school dunk you can imagine.
That's cool.
So that was pretty amazing. I think the whole point is we're trying to create these unique experiences and we're trying to really champion the culture, drive awareness around our stores and our digital environments. And you know, as a digital executive, I am fully dedicated to supporting our physical store footprint. Everything that we're doing right now is dedicated to this concept of omnichannel or unified commerce and the benefit of engaging and pulling those two historically disparate channels together is that when customers shop cross-channel, they buy more and they come back more often. And so a big part of the marketing initiatives that I champion are the ones that really do cross the line between physical and digital. And our brand marketing team does an incredible job of creating content that reflects that. So everything from SMS scavenger hunts to digital installations on the streets in Brooklyn, you know, trying to really find a way to blur the lines between physical and digital. Everybody's really aligned and dedicated to it. And we're reaping the benefits.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then can you mention what it's like to collab with DJ Khaled? What's happening with that?
I can't speak to what it's like to collab with him directly, but we've done a lot of really interesting things with him. I would say my biggest collaboration with him was a big SMS contest.
Okay.
Where we actually gave away, it was like a text to win and you give away signed, we had like 4 pairs of Jordan 4s that he signed. And we did a little piece with him where, you know, we went down to Miami and filmed him in his home, you know, building, it was basically like in a mock store. It was really funny. And, you know, he's so okay. Funny, you know, we give him a script and he rarely reads it. And that's his own thing, you know, but, no, he's an incredible partner and, an incredible champion and advocate. And we have a lot more coming with him too, which is very exciting and will be really cool to announce. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, we've done a Snipes jingle with him. I mean, like he's, you know,
yeah.
Been on the rooftop of our buildings in Brooklyn. I mean, he's just, yeah, he's a really great partner and does a lot of work for us. So
you mentioned Jordans and I want to cause your perspective on Jordans, I value. It's not just someone who's saying, oh, it's a great brand and it's got legacy and it is all those things. But you know, what is the deal with Jordans? Like why is it just so,
no.
Just so hot all the time? Like it never goes away. And I'm a big fan. I'm just curious, like, what have you noticed from your perspective and your position? Yeah. Like, what are your thoughts and opinions on that brand?
Oh my God. I guess it's kind of like threefold. One, it's Michael Jordan. Let's remember this is rooted in the GOAT. He's like he's such an inspiration. He's unbelievable. Right. So it all began around that magic. Right. So every shoe is just kind of like just glittered with that magic. Number one. Number two, the storytelling, and that ties back to cultural events, to your favorite, you know, chicken shop, to like your, it's just the ties that these shoes kind of make to like your favorite flavor of Ben and Jerry's, you know, it's just like, you've got all of these like amazing connections with these other, whether it's CPG or it's events or experiences or, you know, historic milestones. The storytelling around these shoes are so great. And so your ability to connect with them is fantastic. Now, the third piece to this, which I think is so amazing, is how iconic they are, not just because Jordan's associated with them, but the profiles and the styles of these shoes are so cyclical and generational that I have 3 dudes, right? I got twin 8-year-olds and a 3-year-old that I am buying shoes for that I wore when I was a kid. So I am like, you know, I'm just like all nostalgic and, you know, nerding out over buying this footwear for my own kids, that I get to share that with them. And they're as excited about them as I was at that age. And I get to kind of relive that and love that. And man, they're just Nike, man, Jordan. They are just brilliant at the way that they're honoring the legacy of these shoes and just giving them life after life after life after life. It's a beautiful science. It's pretty awesome. You know, I will say that one thing that I've been noticing, right? I've got this unique situation where I'm a retail tech vendor gone retailer, right?
Uh-huh.
And I have a unique perspective on technology's place in the retail environment.
Ooh.
How it gets there, how it's maintained, and how it's managed.
Okay.
And I think that something I've been able to hone over the past few years is this concept of true retail partnership. Like true retail partnership. And I've really been leaning into this recently to figure out, like, is this actually something? Like, is this a thing that is underserved? Or is this a thing that executives are doing and I just don't know about it? But I can tell you from my experience on the tech side, typically what happens is you present this technology and it's purchased and then you hand it off to somebody to install it. And then it gets implemented and you have a customer service rep who maintains it and reports on it. And the relationship just kind of ends there until renewal time, right? Maybe you'll have a couple upsell conversations, but then at renewal, you're kind of like, oh, this is why it's so valuable, resign. And then they resign and you go away mm-hmm. for another 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the retail industry is missing it. I think we're missing an opportunity to truly partner with these tech vendors and reciprocate an actual relationship that extends beyond the contract. And really, I've been trying to do this more and more with the vendors that I work with and the vendors that I'm seeing success with, where I am doing podcasts with them. I am going to market with them. I am championing the work that we're doing, and I'm being an advocate and an evangelist for them to help tell their story and market so other retailers can buy the good stuff, but so I can also support that vendor and get more value out of it. Like the more value I bring to them, the better access to product I'm going to get, the more roadmap influence I'm going to have to serve my own needs, the more negotiating power I'm going to have at the end of the contract, right? When it comes time for renewal. And ultimately, the better retail executive I'm going to be because my tech's going to be working for me more effectively. So I don't know if that's interesting, but I've been testing it out and spending a lot of my time sitting on client advisory boards and giving back to these vendors. And it's been paying off in a really big way. We've been creating these really strategic relationships that are invested in our success because our success means more of this for them. And I'm just surprised that in my own retail tech experience that there weren't more people, more retail executives that were willing to do this work because this reciprocal relationship is really exponential. And I think it's something that retail executives should hold themselves accountable to do.
That's huge. Wow. Yeah. It's like there you go again, like doubling down on the relationship.
Yeah.
It's like focusing on let's build a relationship and let's see what happens if we slow down. Yeah. How else can we support each other in a line besides just I'll buy your tech? And, you know, I think that's awesome. It's like slowing down to speed back up. So
100%.
That's awesome. What does a successful 2023 look like for Snipes? What does a successful 2023 look like for Jenna Fleetman Posner?
Successful 2023. I mean, obviously we're all sitting here with our targets and goals. Huge opportunity for me to migrate Jimmy completely, right? I want JimmyJazz.com to go away and I want to be able to maintain that value. Don't want to leave any money on the table. So that's a big one for us. We have really aggressive goals for next year. So we have to continue to grow, drive the business forward. I want to write a book next year. I want to do that.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So
any ideas, any kind of angle on the book or?
Well, I just talked about it a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah. I want to write a book on partnership. I think that there's really something there, something untapped, and having the opportunity to talk about partnership through the retail lens and through the tech lens, I think could be interesting. So yeah.
Wow. Well, and I also think that your your really cool sports resume is also kind of connected to this. I mean, it seems like you value relationships, you value partnerships, you value team.
Yeah.
I mean, you were field hockey, track and field, national championship, 7-time All-American people, 3-time academic All-American. I mean, you don't want to face off against Jenna basically on any sport, but does that kind of really inform like a lot of kind of who you are as a leader? Is that experience in all those sports?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and it's funny, I've got this thing I've been thinking about, which is kind of the rugby theory is what I've been calling it. And, you know, I was a tremendous sprinter in college. And my senior year, I went abroad. I went to Australia. My senior fall, came back, ran my indoor season. But while I was in Australia, I was there for a World Cup year. I saw this like crazy World Cup rugby. I fell in love with the sport. And my senior spring, I thought, you know what? I've met all my track and field goals. I'm going to piss off my athletic department and I'm going to go play some rugby.
Wow.
And I did. And, you know, my career just kind of picked up really quickly. But the rugby theory concept is I had this one skill, and the skill was pace. It was speed. You know, it was this kind of crazy asset that I had on the field. And it kind of gave me the time that I needed in order to learn the game. And it's not so dissimilar from my career path, which was so squarely on the retail tech side. But when given this opportunity to come over to the retail side, I leveraged those skills that I had to earn the right to learn the game, right? I didn't know what it was going to take to be a retailer. I knew my gaps in the market with these, you know, niche technologies that I was representing for the past decade. I didn't know what it meant to run, you know, a multi-million dollar organization, you know, through the lens of retail. And I think that rugby theoretically gave me this confidence where I'm like, all right, if I just get after it, I'll figure it out. So that's been a definitely from a team building perspective, from a pace perspective, from taking the time to evaluate performance. I think that all of those skills that I learned through rugby and my athletic career in general definitely translate into leadership and team and how I've built this team of what was 10 people when I came on board to a team of 50 now.
Yeah. Wow. That's amazing. Yeah. And we ain't stopping. We ain't slowing down. I have a feeling you're not slowing down. Not a chance.
No.
Well, Jenna, this has been just epic. I knew the time was going to go. I'm like, dang it. We need 2 hours with Jenna. 2 hours with Jenna next time. But this is so awesome. I mean, so just excited for one, like who you are, like as a marketer, like as a human, I'm just excited about like who you are. And then two, like what you and the squad are doing at Snipes. And it's just so encouraging to see the things that you're doubling down on. And I know I'm not the only one that'll be paying attention to seeing where this brand goes, but thank you for being on a Marketing Trends. You dropped the mic today. You killed it. And we loved having you.
Thanks. Love being here. Appreciate it.
You have 8 seconds to capture the attention of your audience. 8 seconds to make a connection or risk a click away, a swipe, or a scroll to the next topic. This difference lies in your ability to deliver relevant experience to your audience across devices and across channels. But delivering on a really great experience is impossible without the right people and the right technology. You've got the right people, but your technology choices make or break someone's experience with your brand. I talk to CMOs all the time within the Fortune 1000, and I know how important this is at the center of gravity for your entire digital experience. Brightspot Content Management System can deliver relevant content, personalized experiences, and cross-channel synergies to create unforgettable brand experiences so you can be a bright spot in someone's day. From global crisis to hunger relief efforts to natural disaster preparation, the messages you deliver save lives. They also inform important decision-making and help keep communities safe and sound. The speed and scale of your content needs to be delivered faster and more precise and on a much larger scale than ever before. Brightspot Content Management System is already supporting some of the world's largest organizations to communicate on a global scale. From Johnson & Johnson sharing breaking news stories about its COVID-19 vaccine to helping Whole Foods tell their brand story to audiences around the world. Brightspot is designed to handle rapid iteration and personalized messages to those you really care about most. Learn more at brightspot.com/marketing trends.